This is SG2 Perspectives, a conversation with industry experts and SG2 thought leaders about the biggest trends in healthcare and what we all expect that's going to mean for the future of healthcare delivery.
It's almost like patients are becoming actuaries, assessing the risk of each site of care that they may have to enter from the healthcare system.
Hello, and welcome to SG2 Perspectives. I am your host, Kelly Richard. Today, we will be discussing the impact of COVID-19 on patient demand for healthcare services. I have with me on the podcast Mark Larson, principal on SG2's intelligence team, an expert in healthcare consumerism strategy, and Dr. Tom Villanueva, physician and associate vice president at Vizient. Tom also hosts the Modern Practice podcast on Vizient's medical leadership channel. Tom has already hosted Mark on his podcast discussing this very topic, but through a clinical leadership lens. So we're going to focus more on the strategic perspective today, but Tom's clinical bend will be extremely valuable in rounding out the conversation. Thank you, both of you, for joining me today.
Happy to.
All right. Thank you.
Great. So just to set the stage a little bit here, many health systems that we work with completely have stopped elective services in anticipation of a COVID-19 surge. And some markets, that has unfortunately come to pass, while in others it either hasn't hit yet or hopefully won't. But either way, health systems have a large backlog of patients that need care and a balance sheet reflecting that shutdown. However, as health systems ramp up their capacity to start having patients back in, the fact is not lost on us that none of those efforts really matter unless patients are willing to come back into hospitals and clinics to receive care. So with that, Mark and Tom, both of you have recently participated in a Vizient-led patient panel where we heard from patients directly. Can you give us a quick state of the state? How would you describe the level of patient willingness to come back into facilities at this time?
Great. Thanks, Kelly. I'll start off. This is Mark. As an industry, we have just received a serious PR punch, and a lot of it is due to the media and really the elevated fear that patients have. And I think the biggest thing that has really changed now is patients are more in charge of their own decision making and really assessing their risk. The discussions that we had during the panel session really centered on a lot of what the doctors and hospitals will need to do to make patients feel safe in the future. In fact, when we asked the question, how safe do you feel? 56% of the folks on the panel said they were somewhat safe. 38% said unsafe. And it's almost like patients are becoming actuaries, assessing the risk of each site of care that they may have to enter from the healthcare system. And what we really learned from the panel is that it's very regionally specific, depending on how much COVID outbreak there was. Their chronicity is a huge factor in their own assessment of risk, because they've heard that from the media, as well as age risk levels. So, and then the other thing too is each patient has their own risk threshold. And we really heard that on the panel discussion as well. So I'd say cautious on both ends of the acuity spectrum. And I think we need to really think about how we're going to message this into the future. Tom, any thoughts there?
You know, Mark, I think you hit many areas that are significant. Folks, I think that this is a competitive advantage that you need to consider in restarting your programs. I think that it also counts on where patients are in their journey in reference to their care. I think that among those patients that, and in fact, I think the survey even shows that those patients that have oncological needs or they're afflicted by a condition that affects their activities of daily living, for example, pain is probably the very best example, they'll most likely come to the procedures. I think also we'll see among those patients that are young and feeling infallible, but the greater other half are those that are going to require some component of very clear and concise communication. Patients are scared, like Mark just very brought up. So I still practice. I haven't touched a patient in over 6 weeks. I'm seeing them exclusively on a virtual platform. And you'd be surprised how many times I feel a patient needs to go into the hospital or an urgent care center. And I spend a good amount of my time trying to convince them to do it. Other examples we see are studies from Italy right now, where there were higher rates of patients dying from acute MIs and stroke at home. And we're seeing similar results here in the United States. But I think that needs to be brought into this as well.
Right. And Mark, the idea of a patient as their own actuary and sort of assessing their own risk is an interesting one and really is a lot to ask of patients. Mm-hmm. So health systems have a role here I think, to focus on creating a safe environment to ramp these elective procedures back up, but also communicating about that safe environment and the plan to keep those patients safe. So, Tom, what is the approach that you think systems should be taking to ensure patient safety?
There are actually, I can think of five right now, Kelly, but the first one would be testing. Now, here's the caveat. We don't know what to do about testing. A recent study just showed that among those patients who are asymptomatic or just had a recent exposure, that there are very high large false negatives if they're using PCR. And many of our clients or members are actually using PCR prior to the procedure. But on average right now, this particular study showed that you start getting better results and less false negatives after day four of the exposure. So this is where you need to have alignment and communication. A lot of leadership when it comes to your ID folks as well, your infectious disease specialists, but also bringing together a multi-specialty group, including supply chain, to actually try to come up with a consistent messaging. Number two is, what are you doing to make those patients feel safe? I also need to preface that what we saw from this, from the actual survey and from the webinar, is that patients don't intend on being alone. They don't want to be alone during these procedures, particularly if they're expecting someone to pick them up at the end of the day. So what are you not only doing to keep them safe, but also what are you doing to keep their loved ones safe as well? Are you going to be providing them with PPE, and do you have enough PPE? Number three is physician involvement and particularly communication. So I mentioned about half of the survey members and also what we're seeing nationally are people that are going to require clear, concise communication. They're going to be wanting to hear something from the organization, but the greater bulk are going to want to hear from the physician doing the procedure themselves or from their primary care physicians, in which they can have a discussion about the pros and cons of actually having the procedure versus that prolonging the procedure for another time. And then I preface again, my fourth comment is that of having a clear and concise communication. Remember, there's a trust issue here. So you need to be consistent, which is something we struggle with many of our systems. A very good example is where I practice at Baptist Health South Florida. They have a PDA right now in which they're actually showing patients a visual map of what they're doing to keep patients safe, actually giving a diagram of the room of how they're using social distancing, how they're having a plexiglass in front of the receptionist room, how they're having that of sterile or alcoholic wipes available at the front door as well. So making an effort to show where patients can feel safe and multiple ways in which they're doing that as well. Mark, what do you think?
Tom, that's a fantastic example. And we heard from the panel that that's what they want. When I think about messaging and communicating to patients, really put it into three different buckets. You know, you're going to be thinking about general marketing. How are you going to message this to your community? The second piece is, how are you going to coach providers to actually do outreach, especially for the higher acuity patients? And then the third thing is the follow through. You can say whatever you want in marketing, but if consumers don't see you following through on your safety promise when they come in to visit, it's going to be key. And that's going to be something that's going to instill trust if you do follow through in a good way. So starting with general marketing, you know, one thing I would encourage all of you to do is really think about, what are you going to do by site? Tom gave a great example in the primary care or the clinic environment, but also thinking about, you know, what are you going to do in your ambulatory centers? What are you going to do in hospital outpatient surgery? What are you going to do in the inpatient environment? Consumers are going to want to know that, because all of them are going to be going into different sites at different times. So thinking about your system of care curve and how acuity and other factors were really going to instill on the consumer to need information, absorb that information. The other piece is, and we learned this from the panel, in your general marketing, make sure that you show data. What data can you show about testing rates, about illustrating where the COVID patients are going and how many COVID patients you have today? What are your safe zones? What data can you show around that? And then, as Tom mentioned, you know, visual is better. I want to see what you're doing. Visual representations, even showing the sites and what you're doing in the waiting areas and other things are very important. It's so funny, the safety piece is such a site-specific component. They already trust providers, but what they really don't know is, and it's just similar to any other sites they're going to in the community, whether it be the barber or the grocery store, they're mentally assessing the safety. Anything you could do to help them make good decisions would be great. The second piece on the provider outreach that I mentioned, can you really deliver there? And I think, you know, it's it's a challenge to have surgeons outreaching to patients before elective procedures. But that was one thing the panel said. In fact, if one of the questions we asked is, when you needed an elective procedure, when would you proceed? 45%, which was the highest percentage in that answering that question, said, when my doctor or hospital says it's safe. So in other words, they want the most trusted person that's taking care of them to actually describe how they're going to be safe. And the key there is having the physician who understands their chronic conditions and understands the risks can help the patient make a good decision. And then the last thing is just following through on your safety promise. If you're saying you're going to be doing all these things like testing, taking temperatures, et cetera, the patient's going to be really watching to make sure you're doing that and assessing that moving forward.
Mark, they overemphasize that. You need to be doing what you said you're going to do to keep them safe. And again, I just want to overemphasize the very importance about engaging your physicians, possibly even working on a scripting program on how they're going to communicate with their patients.
Right. And I think the constant changing of information, I mean, we're all just kind of learning about how this virus behaves and what you have to do to be safe. So having a very clear plan of how you communicate new information as it comes in is really, really key. And a little bit more about how you communicate to different patients. Mark, in your consumerism work, many of the insights that you draw are segmented by generation. So how do you think communication regarding COVID-19 varies based on patient age? Or in this situation, is it segmented a different way? Should we be looking at health risk, for example? How do you think about that?
Kelly, I think that's the big question that all of our clients are asking today. You guys have a difficult challenge ahead of you, because before you could segment, you know, by age, by generation, by chronicity, a lot of other factors. But today we're trying to really assess what the consumer or the patient's own feeling about risk is. And that's a little trickier. So what we did, Tom and I, after we listened to the panelists the other day, we developed some archetypes that we thought, hey, this is simple. It worked for us. And so just an idea. And I think it's important that you think about your own architects and your own market, because your markets are all very different as to how much COVID has been in the market, as well as, you know, the types of consumers in your market. But we came up with three archetypes. The first one was Bob. Bob, he feels pretty invincible. He's typically healthy. He's less loyal to a system, but he, you know, he's really more concerned about risk for his family members. So he's kind of the guiding light as well, and he's going to help family members assess that risk. But, you know, the interesting thing about Bob is he may need an ACL procedure down the road, but he's really willing to postpone surgery until after COVID-19 subsides or slows down a little bit. So he really wants to know what provider and hospitals really are going to win his trust. So how are you going to win Bob's trust over so that as he's working with family members that may be sicker, you can help them? The second archetype is Mary. Mary's cautious. She has one or more chronic conditions. And I think the thing that was interesting is the most of that panel was actually under the age of 65. And so there were a lot of folks that had chronic conditions in that mix. And they were very confident in their ability to self-manage their conditions. They were well-educated about those conditions, but they really, at this point, really prefer proactive communication from a provider. They want to hear from their provider if they need to go into the clinic or have a diagnostic. They want to hear about how safe it is. And they really do value that data and information regarding your COVID-19 response and safety. So Mary's all about cautious. She prefers virtual visits to in-person care for clinic visits right now. So thinking about it, how can you redesign care for Mary? And then Jim was the really the last archetype that we had. And Jim's fearful. He has multiple comorbidities, high receive vulnerability to contract infection. He's very concerned about that. And his family's heavily involved in decision-making. So thinking about your messaging for Jim, very fearful, is how are you going to message to both Jim and his family, and really requiring some proactive communication from dedicated provider or even his chronic care teams.
Yeah, I think that what we need to keep in mind, there's a lot of fear and there's a lot of confusion. We've been telling the public to stay away from facilities, stay at home, stay at home, stay at home. And now what's so different? There's also a lot of confusion in what we're hearing from our local, state, and federal governments, and then from our public health individuals as well, either be nationally or even locally as well. And we see a lot of contradiction. So I preface again, you'll probably see a wave of patients who have oncological issues or patients that are having difficulties with activity of daily living, specifically pain. But then the next component is going to lead that area of clear and concise communication coming from all stakeholders, but specifically from the physicians.
Right. And it sounds like, Tom, you're seeing a lot of situations where the gyms who are fearful, you sort of have to lay out for them the cost-benefit analysis. What is the risk here of staying home when you are having a medical emergency or having, you know, a heart attack? There's got to be some sort of communication around the safety of getting the virus versus succumbing to whatever condition that you need medical care for.
Couldn't agree more. As we just discussed a little while ago, I mean, people are dying from heart attacks in their home. They're in fear of a 2% chance of actually getting an infection in a hospital, and those numbers tend to change, obviously, versus a significantly higher risk of having mortality from acute myocardial injury at this moment. This is the level of fear that we need to compete with.
First, we have to cover, obviously, the safety component and making sure that patients understand that it's safe to come into a facility. But beyond the safety component and really accessing care at the appropriate time and place, in healthcare consumerism, we also have to think about convenience and really cost, which is top of mind right now, particularly because we're entering into a recession. So has that changed the discussion in when we think about consumerism, are convenience and cost top of mind?
Boy, Kelly, that's the big question. And I really would encourage all of you that are listening to think about this as a pretty big strategic opportunity for your hospital and health system. Whether you're providers, whether you're strategic leaders, whether they're hospital administrators, your ability to really think about from the consumer's decision points, quality, which is now at the top of the spectrum, cost and convenience is more important than ever. And I'll start with quality. You know, quality, when we did surveys in the past at SG2 at the end of last year, quality was more about how do I select a provider that I can trust? But it's really taken on with COVID a whole new level of importance. And as we've talked so much about safety and the concerns around that, your ability to differentiate yourself in the marketplace on how safe your locations are and message that is more critical than ever. The second piece around cost. You know, cost in the short term may not be a huge issue because right now many patients still have their insurance because they're furloughed and they continue to have insurance. But we're going to see in the long term, this is going to be a bigger problem. Out-of-pocket costs for those who are commercially insured are going to be a little bit more painful if they've lost jobs. And then certainly some of the mix of commercially insured may be shifting to Medicaid in your market or even uninsured. So cost is going to come into the picture, not so much in the short term, but more in the long term. And then convenience is the last piece. And convenience is the real opportunity when you think about your entire system of care. Convenience turns into, from the consumer's perspective, at this time, how convenient is it for me to enter your system and feel safe, going back to that quality factor? And as strategists and providers, what are the opportunities for us to redesign care to make it more convenient for consumers to enter our system, our locations, or virtually interact with that? So, you know, some of the things that we've heard from other health systems is we've had conversations at SG2 with them over the last several weeks. First of all, they're talking about, what about diagnostic centers? You know, if we're going to provide a lot more care virtually, we're going to have some diagnostic centers in the community that are safe locations and very easy for consumers to interact with. But what about virtual waiting technology? Many of you have done this in your urgent cares, but what about doing that at your retail clinics or your provider clinics, actually allowing folks to be in a virtual waiting room versus going in and potentially being concerned to be in a lobby? And then what about your call centers? Are there more opportunities to deliver more services, you know, more behavioral health, other services virtually from your call center locations? And then there's a last piece, and that's really thinking about your chronic patients. Are there opportunities so they don't have to have as many face-to-face interactions with the health system? Before, they didn't have as many issues with going in to all the different locations, but the number of visits means more risk to consumers. So be thinking about that for the chronic patients as well. Tom, any thoughts about this?
Yeah, you know, Mark, I refer to this, as do many, as this is the new norm. Again, in my primary care practice, I would venture to say that 50% of my visits could easily be done virtually at this moment. And as we start getting innovation on how to monitor patients, this is one thing that we need to keep in mind. Your virtual platform has now skyrocketed. You need to leverage that even further. Patients have now gotten a taste of it. They realize that, you mean I don't need to get dressed, I don't need to park in, I have to wait in a waiting room anymore, and they liked it. So this is the new norm. I also mentioned that in reference to consumerism, yes, quality and costs are convenience, but I preface again the importance of trust. In the books, The Speed of Trust, they say there are three components of it: character, consistency, and competency. So, and your character is how much trust do you gain within the community by actually having or doing the things that you do and say. And then there's that consistency. And let's be honest, many of our systems struggle with that. It's not uncommon where different stakeholders will actually give the patient different bits of information and quite often contradict themselves. That has to stop altogether in this new norm. And then competency. Yes, they do trust the health system, but they trust more the physician at this moment. And I'm not being elitist. It's the physician doing the procedures at this moment. So how to engage your procedure list, if you will, on what the scripting is, on what they need to communicate. And also important is their primary care physician, making sure he or she is on board and then supporting actually having the procedure done.
And when we think a little bit more about where and how consumers are accessing care, how do we think the recession will play a role there?
Tom, do you want to take that one first?
Sure, I will. So I think that many things that come to mind, and these are actually comments that patients have told me, you know, can I afford this procedure? What is the risk of not having the procedures? Is it going to cause complications, or is it going to affect my activities of daily living going into the future? Can I afford to take time off now? Am I that in that position at work? Or do I have limited PTO now? Did I have to give up PTO during the time of the pandemic? And then more important, are there other options here?
Tom, those are all great points. And you know, I think it goes back to really thinking about, you know, the consumers and the different profile of individuals that that you're caring for in the community. Your virtual volumes are going way up. And that's exciting. But I think we really also need to focus on, you know, just thinking about care redesign. This is not temporary. We know COVID is going to last in our communities for a while. I think the question is how can we provide access to care for those most vulnerable that may have some cost impacts, that don't potentially have the dollars right now to afford to go in to a clinic visit? Are there some virtual opportunities that we can provide that are lower cost that still provide access, that we can get them into the system? And especially as, you know, as the economy is, we really, from what we're seeing, it's going to be a slow crawl back out to a better economy in the future. So we need to really be thinking about that. Staying connected with our consumers, with our patients, is going to be more important now than ever.
Right. And it's just a very uncertain time. And it sounds like there's a critical role for health systems to play in being in a trusted role for their patients. We're going to continue to have to innovate the way that we deliver care in order to show patients that they're safe and that care can be delivered in a seamless way, integrating the new requirements of safety that we're seeing with this pandemic.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you, Mark and Tom, for joining me today. If you like what you're hearing, please also listen and subscribe to our colleague Tom Villanueva's Modern Practice podcast on Vizient's Medical Leadership Channel. You can specifically listen to the other podcast where Mark is on, and they're sort of discussing this from more of a clinical perspective, and other episodes in which Tom discusses key healthcare trends through the clinical leadership lens. You can find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you for listening and stay healthy.
This has been another great episode of SG2 Perspectives, where industry experts and SG2 thought leaders explore the drivers of tomorrow's healthcare strategies to inform today's decision makers. Contact us anytime by sending an email to sg2perspectives@sg2.com. We'd love to hear from you. SG2 revolutionized healthcare demand forecasting with the Impact of Change forecast, and today, we're the industry's premier strategy advisory firm. To learn more, visit sg2.com. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you again soon.